Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, February 3rd, going right into the show tonight, coming from somewhat of a remote location, and what a situation in the Northwest. The poor people of the upper United States dealing with the winter of the century. The storm, I'm looking at it right now on the satellite map as the map of a few days ago as it moved through the central United States. And good grief, the storm is enormous, and as it breaks into the eastern part of the storm, and by the way, at the same time, the northeastern states are getting a totally different storm, and a first storm, so to speak, one of many that have rolled through that area this year. And if you know anybody in New York, they've had probably, well, all of the northern states have had a record winter this year. But the point is that the storm that currently rolled through the United States this week extended far down into the Gulf of Mexico, drawing a lot of moisture up and making the conditions in those states absolutely miserable. At least the people who are dealing with this winter certainly will remember it for a long time, but especially, and as you are well aware, the same winter when they are voting in a carbon tax to tax you because of global warming. Global warming. But anyway, just a quick mention on Egypt, of course, all of the problems going on in that country. Interestingly enough, you see many of the activities that would happen in the United States if such a revolution type of activity were to occur. Removal of cell phone communication, blocking the internet, in other words, blocking the ability of people to communicate, the common person. We're also seeing leaders coming out of the populace. This is something that the New World Order does not like, does not want to see, does not want to hear about, because they have their designated leaders in every country of the world, not the least of which is Egypt. Good grief, of all of the countries in the world that have been controlled for a very long time, the very source, the very birthplace of many of the secret societies in Egypt, and as the world came through the great catastrophe, the passing of Comet Venus, explained by Velikovsky, the secret cults came out of there. Remember that when The Greeks, in fact, went, the ancient Greeks, as a young country, with Solon's uncle, I believe, who went back to Egypt, and he asked the secret priest cults of the time in Egypt, he said, "Where did we come from? We don't know anything about our birth or origin or history in Greece. And the priest cults told him, they said, you have no idea what happened. You, the only people that survived in your country were the sheep herders who were living up in the mountains. There was a great flood, a great catastrophe, and there have been five similar catastrophes in the past 10,000 years. They explained that every time they got up and moving as a society, one of these major earthwide catastrophes would come through. That's where they talked about Atlantis. That's where one of the original stories of Atlantis comes from. So at any rate, very interesting to see that. But what I'm talking about now are the secret societies. Remember that in the ancient texts, which were concurrent, that actually came before the great catastrophe, they did away with interest. One of the very specific things talked about was getting that the society could not function with interest. In other words, loaning money with interest. There was a way that just choked and stifled a country, a populace. But all of this, as I said, the secret societies that eventually came through and became the bankers of the world have their instruction book on how to control the populace. These are very old, the way of taxation, interest, banking, continual wars, and using the populace for warfare, keeping countries pitted against one another. And these are very old techniques. But as you move through the Old Testament into the New Testament and see, for example, Christ throwing the money changers out of the temple, this is all very symbolic and historical. This all happened for a reason. I heard a very good lecture just about a week ago. Well, for example, when Christ picked up the apostles and they followed him for the first time, many were fishermen. They were fishing on the Sea of Galilee, and as he walked by, he said, "Look, I'm going to make you fishers of men." And it was very symbolic. There were many symbolic things that happened. But throwing the money changers out of the temple was very symbolic. It's one of the great symbolic events of that time. But that was indicative of the money handlers, the international money handlers, being thrown out. And now that's something that today we have to look at very seriously. The world can no longer exist with the money changers running the governments, running the world. There's a very interesting commercial I saw on TV the other day. A little girl is playing with their mom, and I think they're pulling a kite, and the mom is running and looks like she's got a great big 50-pound lead ball, and it's chained down to her ankle, and the mom is trying to run and keep up with the little girl, and the little girl is saying, "Mom, come on, let's go, let's run and have fun," or whatever. And the mom is like, "I can't," she's like, and then it's a commercial about smoking, or about stopping smoking. And I thought how similar this is to society. Everybody out there, everybody listening to this show, has a giant ball and chain around their neck, around their ankles, and every day you carry this ball and chain. I once gave an example of birds flying south for the winter. It was last fall, and it was the time when the geese and the ducks were doing their migration, and I said, what if the geese and the ducks and the animals were taxed at a 40% rate? Of all of the food, all of the warmth they created in the winter, everything they did, and let's take an example of a goose flying south for the winter. If it was taxed at 40% of its efforts and of its food, everything it did, eating food, it only could eat 60%, and 40% was taxed and taken away from it. And then when it took flight and flew southwards, 40% of its efforts, of every wing stroke, was taken away from that bird, it would never make it. It couldn't possibly make it. And then interest would be added to that, so that when it finally got to its nesting ground and built a home to have its kids, then it had to pay interest. It really didn't own anything. And everything it did cost more money. The interest, the overbearing amount of interest. And what I like to explain to people is there's a lot of confusion. I like to always point out something called an amortization schedule. When you get a loan at a bank, they say, "Oh, it's only 3% interest," or it's, "Oh, good rates, 7% interest." A lot of people don't understand that when you start paying on that loan, you're paying 95% interest. Most people don't hold a loan more than for 2 to 3 to 5 years, and then they have to refinance. And of course, that cycle's been broken now, because when people go to refinance, they cannot, because their house is worth less. But basically, people had to refinance every 5 years. So then you get back at the initial stage of that amortization schedule, paying 95% interest. There was a very interesting case of the man in Colombia that was loaning money at 30% flat rate, and these were like micro loans for small business, things like that. And he was competing quite nicely against the banks. They finally arrested him and sent him to New York for trial. What an interesting situation. And they paraded him around a airport with machine gun guards and on national TV. And a lot of people lost their money because, of course, the government came in and shut down his investment business. But he was competing against the banks who claimed to only charge 7% interest or 10% interest for business loans, etc. But in reality, we're charging 95% interest. That's just a way, another way of lying to the public. But at any rate, right now the interesting thing in Egypt is you see leaders coming out of the populace. That is something that historically has never been allowed. Christ was a leader that came out of the populace, and we all know what they did to him. So they don't like people that come out of the populace. They like people that come through the standard route. That's why they like scientists with PhDs, because they're trained in the system. They're trained how to work within the system. You don't upset the apple cart. You don't do anything unusual. You follow the routine and you follow the standard scientific method. One time I was at a international scientific meeting presenting my comet material, and I had a great big beautiful poster made. It was before the rest of the scientists even thought about making beautiful posters. They would come with little sheets of paper and pin them up for their discussion, etc. But I had this big beautiful poster made. I think at the time it cost me, this is back in the '80s, I think it cost me about $600 at that time, which was quite a bit. And of course, I paid for that out of my pocket, not out of government funding. And one of the lead NASA scientists came up to me very angry. And this was at a time when the comet flybys were occurring. Jacobini, Zinner, and the early flyby of Halley's Comet. And he was very angry that I would put something up there that was not of standard science. And he came over and he says, "You're not following the scientific method." And I said, "Oh, you mean I'm not referencing your work and adding to it some little tidbit and then this honors your work?" And he said, "Yes, that I was not following the known scientific method." Very angry. What he was basically saying, and oddly enough, he came with an entire entourage of scientists and students who all stood at a distance when he came over to confront me. He was from Goddard, one of the Goddard space scientists, and was very adamant that I should not have crossed that line to do something independent, to be talking about scientific principles that were not commonly agreed upon by the scientific cults, you might call them. But at any rate, that's why science is controlled by governments and by funding. That's why you go to scientific meetings. All of the people except me wear a badge with an affiliation. They are affiliated with some sort of group, a university, and they all get their money from funding from the federal government, and they all march to the party line. Okay, well, enough of that, but it's very interesting. My comment on Egypt is that they have leaders coming out of the populace. And that's something, as I said, the New World Order does not want to see. Just back again on the commentary on the winter of 2010-2011, it is absolutely incredible. The storm, as I said, that passed through the United States this week, a tremendous block of snow through the middle United States, but then extending down with a storm-like system that is typical of a summer thunderstorm system, one of the huge thunderstorm systems that would run through the country. The southern part of this storm extending down into the Gulf of Mexico, drawing a lot of poisonous gas up into the United States, covering basically from the Mississippi River east, that Gulf of Mexico moisture. So it raises the question, is this poisoning the land? One of the great unspoken messages of the Gulf of Mexico British Petroleum disaster is that the gases that are being released into the atmosphere, and remember the plants that were dying, etc., was Arkansas, Missouri, those states had like an acid fallout coming from water that came out of the Gulf of Mexico. And what would happen is after a rain, the water would bead up into little beads on the leaves of the plants and then burn a hole through the leaves. So you would see where the water had beaded up, it would actually burn a hole right through the leaves. And so it was killing the plants, killing the crops. Will that continue and poison the land up through the eastern part of the United States? This summer, if we see a summer, the way things are going, not only could we have damage to crops because of weather, an extended winter or a diminished planting season, but we could also see water that's poisonous coming out of the Gulf of Mexico killing plants, or even poisoning the dirt as we speak. So when the snow melts, that poison leaches down into the soil. Right now, they're this past week also talking about, this headline caught my eyes, a Katrina-like storm moves towards Australia. And so they're speaking about a storm moving towards Australia, and Australia has certainly had its set of woes this year. Very unseasonable. Australia, of course, is in its summertime right now, and they have storms that move through northern Australia between Australia and the equator, but nothing like we have seen this year. It makes one wonder if somebody's playing some games with Australia. Okay, now the main science topic I'm going to talk about tonight, I'm going to talk about volcanoes around the world, concentrating on the volcano at Yellowstone. Announcement this week that the surface layer around Yellowstone in the crater of Yellowstone, which is immense, it's about 50 miles across, literally the largest volcanic crater or caldera on Earth, and it rose 10 inches and then dropped back down, so basically took a big like respiratory movement. And sometimes scientists are worried that this could be indicative of an eruption about to take place. One thing I've talked about in the past on many shows is for the world governments, and especially the United States, to take responsibility, and for the scientists to recommend to the government that they have to drain the lake at Yellowstone, because steam is what powers a volcano. The volcanoes that don't have steam are like the shield volcanoes that just ooze out molten rock. That's not a violent explosive volcano, the kind of explosive volcano we see up in the Pacific Northwest of the United States or other parts of the world. For example, still in the Kamchatka Peninsula. They look like a cinder cone, but these are the explosive types of volcano, and they are powered by steam. In other words, a water vein deep in Earth gets into the, down into the, a chasm, a break in the Earth, and gets down into the heated layer where it instantly turns into steam. and you have the world's biggest steam engine, and nothing stops steam. It's probably one of the most explosive forces known to man. The space shuttle launch system is based on steam. It just goes about in a little bit different way. It's oxygen and hydrogen forming, and when they form, burn, a chemical burn, so to speak, of oxygen and hydrogen, you end up with steam. So basically, it's a big steam rocket. But at any rate, the lake at Yellowstone, and I've talked about this, I've even talked about how to do it, you could easily drain that lake, just put a pumping, it wouldn't even have to be a pumping system, a siphon would do it, put a closed tube system down into the base of the lake, and on the southeast corner of the park, there's a break in the mountains that surround the caldera, and you could easily drain that lake down, and it would flow south a little bit, and then west, off to Oregon, out to the Badlands of Oregon, and it would pollute some area there, but it would get that water away from the volcanic caldera at Yellowstone. So anyway, I'll go into a little bit more detail on that, also talking about volcanoes around the world and around the solar system. So just a little bit of commentary. I want to go back to the situation in Egypt. I want to mention that the problems that they're seeing there, the people have finally basically had enough. They are not interested in dealing with the world established government anymore. And when I say that, it's these governments all appear to be legitimate. They all legitimize themselves through the United Nations. And you notice that countries or through other organizations like the OAS, Organization for American States, and all of these groups, which are basically bankers' groups. These are groups that give a facade of international peace, etc., but really they're a vehicle for international warfare, and for you see the people that have worked in the UN, there's been some very good people that have worked in the UN, but the overall concept of a one world organization that ultimately is controlled by bankers, and you see the agendas coming through, or you can look at groups like the International Monetary Fund, which works in conjunction with the United Nations to bring peace into the world. No, they're bringing warfare and destruction and ownership of the world by the elite bankers. No question about it. So it's very clear, all of the problems that we see in the world today, they're very complicated, but if you look for a single root cause of all of the problems, whether you're in a third world country and unemployed, if you're in a third world country and have the overbearing government that's linked into the, say, European banking systems, then those are the primary causes of the problems in those countries. Sure, there's a lot of other problems, but with this overbearing banking system controlling the world government, keeping the people down and keeping the real leaders out of sight, killing them off one by one. You see that John Kennedy, when he was killed, he knew what was going on in the world government. So what he did, he had two acts on his desk that never, well, he possibly signed them, but the last two things on his desk, one was to get rid of the CIA, which is the police force of the world bankers. A lot of people don't understand that. The CIA is not some kind of a organization to help secretly to help the United States in its international peace efforts. No, they are an international police force for the international banking community. So John Kennedy was going to do away with them. He was also going to do away with the fiat money system. He was starting to reprint the U.S. currencies, congressionally mandated currencies, and get rid of the Federal Reserve. all of this taking place the day before he was shot and killed in Texas. And, of course, that whole story, there's not a single person, I believe, that Oswald shot Kennedy, that he was a patsy, he was set up, and it was the CIA and the CIA hitmen who shot Kennedy. Some of our possibly very high-ranking government officials over the past decades were there and very closely related to that operation. Giving control back, and of course Johnson, isn't it interesting that one of the first things Johnson did was to issue the final silver, real silver coin, which was the 1964 Kennedy silver dollar. I believe they were half dollars. But it was the last silver coin in the United States. After that, the United States went off of the silver-gold system. And there's a lot of confusion, just a quick comment, there's a lot of confusion about the silver and gold metal monetary system. And here's how it works. Your currency, and whether it's paper money backed by metal, or whether it's silver-gold standard, here's how it works. You don't have to have the amount of metal or gold in a warehouse like Fort Knox. You don't have to have the amount that's equivalent to all of the money in circulation. Here's how it works. Congress uses that to back up money that's newly generated. Okay, so let's say that a bridge has to be built, a government building has to be built, a school has to be built, somebody wants to start a business and needs startup money, or somebody wants to build a house. These are many common examples of why people need cash infusion or loans. And the loans were never, ever supposed to be part of a private banking system, and certainly never part of a amortization schedules should have never been allowed. Only a single percentage usage fee, which was charged, would have been charged just for the maintenance of operation of the bank, to fill out the forms, etc., but not interest, not compound interest. That was never meant to be. In fact, those have been outlawed in the ancient texts very clearly. Those are the balls and chains on all of modern society that we can't shred because they're protected by the government now. But at any rate, the coinage, the metal coins or the metal bars that back up the monetary system, you only need enough for the new projects that are coming along to back up the money, because once that project is completed, there's a building, there's a bridge, there's a house where family lives, those have value, and they back up the money in the system, the paper money, just as much as gold or silver, if you understand, because they have measurable value. That means somebody from a foreign country could come here, they could bring their value monetary system also based on gold or silver, and they could buy a house here, or we could go to another country and buy a house with or trade houses or whatever, because they would maintain their value. This is what China is doing right now. They're producing a value-based monetary system. And that's why they're going to come out of this thing as the top country in the world. At any rate, but right now we have fiat money. We have a situation where the Federal Reserve is a phony banking outfit related to the International Monetary Fund, the International Bank. And who are these people? Where do they get all their money? They don't have any money. It's all paper. It's all fictitious. It's not backed by anything. And they control basically the federal government of just about every country in the world. Okay, enough of that. But that's why, just summarize, and I would like to do this regularly, that's why the United States populace has to speak spearhead the effort to get rid of the Federal Reserve, get rid of the Federal Reserve banking system, return to solid banking where Congress controls, and I'm talking about a real Congress, not this phony baloney group of imposters and worthless people that populate the Congress right now. We need real Congress people, people who understand the Constitution and understand that they represent the people, not pharmaceutical companies, not the oil corporations, not the international banking community, but the people. Okay, on to the topic of Yellowstone. This announcement coming out, the rise and fall of the surface of the volcano at Yellowstone occurred over the, this has been going on for some time. If you did not know, the buffalo in that area all died, the fish in the lake died, and that's why it's necessary, as I said, to drain that water, and especially before it comes more polluted. Get that water out of there. It's just sitting there becoming more polluted. It's not doing anybody any good. And if that volcano erupts, that water will drop down into a chasm and turn into steam, and it's going to blow the material out of that 50-mile-wide radius out of the caldera at Yellowstone. It's going to blow it all over, blow it sky high. So it has to, any water in that area has to be drained. Any aquifers has to be drained. We know there's a lot of water under the ground there because of the geysers that, remember Old Faithful, which no longer is very faithful to its rhythmic patterns. But for a long time since its discovery, it would go off quite regularly. But why was that? There was just an internal rhythm between water falling down into a chasm, blowing out that blowhole, blowing it clear, and then water trickling back down to the point where it would turn into steam and blow out of there again. But we know that there is subterranean water in the Yellowstone area. All of that water should be drained and gotten out of there, because then the Yellowstone volcano is nothing more than a flowing, active reservoir of molten rock. It's not the explosive type of volcano that would occur when all of that water turns to steam. So anyway, let me go around the world right now and just talk about the active volcanoes around the world. Just to give the first where there's multiple volcanoes active, we have Guatemala. There's two active volcanoes right next to each other. Indonesia, there's two active volcanoes. Melanesia, there's two active volcanoes. And then Japan, two active volcanoes. Three active volcanoes on the Kamchatka Peninsula of Russia, northeastern Russia. And then there are active, by the way, there's right now classified 17 active volcanoes on Earth. There's the Kilauea volcano in Hawaii. And then southern Chile has Chaitán. Let me see what I'm missing here. Guatemala. Luzon is there are two. I've already mentioned that. Chaitán of southern Chile. I've already mentioned Kilauea in Hawaii. The central Java, Indonesia. There are two. And Ecuador. I'm sorry, when I spoke of two in Guatemala, there's the other one is actually in, there are two in Guatemala and one in Ecuador, very, very close to each other. Ecuador is not close to Colombia, or not close to Guatemala. Let me go through this again. Guatemala has two active volcanoes, and Ecuador, which is in South America, has one, the Sanjay, I believe it's pronounced, volcano in that country. Okay, so at any rate, when you look at the world, these all run around the Pacific Rim. All of the active volcanoes right now in the world run around the Pacific Rim with this, like a center dot, so to speak, in the Hawaiian Islands, Kilauea. And by the way, there should be classified also another active volcano. Possibly it's considered part of Kilauea, but it's actually breaking land southeast of the island of Hawaii, and it's breaking water. It may run through the surface of the ocean very shortly. At any rate, one of the things that you will see is these volcanoes all sit along fault lines, except for the Kilauea volcano, which is considered to be a hot spot, a thin spot in the Earth's crust, from which the Hawaiian Islands have formed relatively recently. We have not on the active list are a whole series of volcanoes along the Pacific Northwest of the United States. Just one second. One of the first things we notice, though, when looking at the active volcanoes of the world, I mentioned they are along the Pacific Rim, there is a lot more activity around the world, volcanoes which could go active at any moment. For example, there are volcanoes that are regularly active, which are not active at this time. Mount Etna, Italy has, of course, active volcanoes. So the world volcanic scene is, let's put it this way, is very, very active. The point I always like to try and make in talking about volcanoes, earthquakes, and a lot of people see the plates, the rim edges, the plates of the Earth meet at attach at boundary layers, and this is where a lot of earthquake activity occurs. Also, these plates are moving, and these plates, there's a concept called plate tectonics, and I have repeatedly stated that this concept where plates simply slide around the Earth is ridiculous. They are certainly moving, but they are relaxing, they are adjusting, let's put it that way, from a major earth-shattering event that happened thousands of years ago, the most recent one, and these events have happened multiple times throughout the history of the Earth. So, at any rate, the movement and let's put it this way, if the Earth were the age that the scientists talk about, 4.5 billion years old, and nothing had happened since, the plate boundaries would be simply drying up, so to speak, and they would be shrinking at all of the plate boundaries. That would be the normal cooling process for the Earth. And there's no mechanism. There's no mechanism. The textbook always show the plate boundaries, one sliding under the other. Well, sure, when these plates were jarred, they had tremendous forces acting, and the plates were thrown around and driven one under the other. Something had to give. Mountain ranges formed in the middle of these plates, where giant land waves, just like ocean tidal waves, but these are land waves caused by a passing celestial object. Just imagine a wave of water. Okay, what happens to a wave of water? We all have seen surf, and the long ocean waves come in. What do? They break. They rise up, and all of that energy that's traveled all the way across the ocean stops right there. And then the wave washes back out. There's a current that goes down under the ocean. It's called undertow. There's actually a very dangerous type of current. As the wave comes in, the water comes in the top, it has to go someplace. So it goes down along the surface of the underwater surface line of the land underwater, let's put it that way. And so the point is that when this major event occurred within the past 10,000 years, possibly as we know it, was multiple times. There's not a great history on that. Velikovsky probably does the best job of reconstructing history and putting a time frame on it, the best that I have seen. And that puts one of the last events about 4,000 years ago, which is about the time when scientists will begrudgingly claim that the mastodons went extinct, the saber-toothed tiger, that group of animals went extinct. Not very long ago, the crust on Antarctica, the South American continent, is only about 4,000 years old. That's why it's sliding off. That's why the land is warm underneath. All of the situations around the world can be understood very nicely if you understand that there was a major earth-altering event, which also flipped the poles. The entire surface of the earth was jarred around, and the ocean levels changed by about 300 to 600 feet. There was an increase in the ocean level, and then the earth was heavily glaciated. We're just seeing the reversal of those glaciated areas as in the past 50 years, as the earth is finally warming up to its normal as its normal place in the climate, temperature, etc. So global warming is a natural result. Now, this is another great point. Can you imagine if science were to accept the fact that this event happened and that global warming is nothing more than the earth getting back to normal? Gee, where would that put political leaders of the world? They couldn't have their carbon tax. They couldn't control a lot of the control of water is because of the pollution and the greenhouse pollution that supposedly is occurring, but really it's due to polluting the earth due to a use of oil, which we don't even need because the solar system can provide us with huge amounts of electrical energy for free. All we have to do is build Tesla towers and receiving stations around the world, plug them into the grid, and we have all of the free power we could possibly want. It's imperative that the governments support bad two-tier science. Tier 2 science being what most people view as the top layer of science in this country. So at any rate, enough of that. But back to the solar systems of the... let's go out and take active solar system volcanoes. The first volcanic activity in the solar system was observed around the moon Io of Jupiter. And it is claimed that the heat that causes this volcanic activity is due to tidal forces. In other words, as Io moves around Jupiter, its surface is pumped, kind of like an accordion, which creates heat. And there might be some heat activity there, but also it's very obvious that Io is a very young addition to our solar system. Interestingly enough, Io is the innermost of the Jupiter moons, and when you look at capture, it has to have present the same problem to scientists as the Venus in our solar system. How did a brand new planet get in past all of the other planets and in close to closer to the sun than Earth even? Well, it did so by two methods. One was the comet, when during the comet stage, the tail drag of the comet causes the orbit of the comet nucleus to circularize, and the orbital eccentricity or to diminish. In other words, there are two processes involved with the tail drag. It's the damping of the orbit, in other words, a drag that causes the celestial object, in this case, what eventually became the planet Venus, the nucleus of that great comet. It passed Earth, it passed Mars on the way in. It was originally captured by Jupiter. All of this is very well explained in the capture model. And then eventually Venus as a comet, the ancient Mayans from the very ancient text called it Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the night sky, that controlled Earth, that on two occasions, 54 years apart, did severe damage to Earth. This is the same situation as with Io, the innermost moon of Jupiter. So, in other words, what happened is Io was a huge comet. It was eventually captured as a moon into the system of Jupiter, into the moon system, and obviously worked its way in using that same technique of tail drag to work its way in through the older moons that sit in orbits outside of where Io now resides in its innermost orbit. And so clearly the volcanism on Io is due to the fact, simply just like the tremendous volcanism on Venus, it's due to the fact that it's a young celestial object. But NASA, in its need to present bad science and keep the real information from the public, why is that necessary? I talk about that all the time. Because if it were known that comets are not dirty snowballs, that they actually have, some of the big comets have the ability to become planets and moons of the solar system by capture, then the next question is, well, what's a comet? Well, they're very electrical because the sun has tremendous electric field built up around it. It's actually a subtle electric field, let's put it that way, radial electric field. And the discharge of that electric field is what causes comets to form. That's a physical reaction of the sun's electric field, the discharge of that electric field, and then the material flowing into the negatively charged comet nucleus. All of this is what we see. What would be the first question out of people's mouth? Well, if the there's such an electrical condition in the solar system, can we tap into it for our power source? And the answer is yes. At any rate, one of the other things people would realize is that this could happen again at any time, and that we better start preparing. And this does not include the governments of the world who want to keep everybody at bay, everybody working, everybody enslaved. So it is not in the best interest of the government leadership of the world, the New World Order, to allow real science to be promoted to the public, because it goes against their very existence. If people really knew what was going on, their very existence of the world leadership would be very much in question. And as in Egypt right now, as I said, rulers coming out of the populace, the rulers that come out of Egypt, this may be a very interesting situation and possibly many countries to follow, but you have to understand that most organizations, most revolutionary organizations, are infiltrated within days with people who really don't have their best intentions in mind. So anyway, back to active volcanoes around the solar system. There's a different type of volcano out amongst the moons and planets in the solar system. It's called a cryovolcano. On Earth, the volcanoes, a liquid gets down into the heated chamber. Water goes down into a heated chamber and forms an explosion. That's why cubic miles of Earth can be blown up into the stratosphere in a matter of seconds. There's a tremendous amount of power being belched out of the ground at one time. And that is caused by water turning into steam. But on the other planets, there are other types of chemicals, methane, and the other moons might be extremely cold. So those chemicals are liquid, whereas normally they would be in a gaseous state on Earth. They are in a liquid state, and the same issue can happen. They can drop down into a heated chamber and blow out the top. So literally, the cinder cone volcanoes on Earth could be very easily classified as cryovolcanoes, because that's literally what they are. So on Earth, basically, just to summarize, you see two types of volcanoes, the cinder cone type volcano, and many times there are cinder cone volcanoes on top of the shield volcanoes. The shield volcanoes are the long sloping type of volcano where the flows come out, they'll flow for a while, then stop, then flow again, and this builds up over centuries and thousands and millions and possibly even billions of years. That's the shield volcano, but you may also have the cinder cone, the explosive types of volcanoes around the world, or around the solar system. You may have those also. So literally, I don't like the classification in standard science that cryovolcanoes occur in outer space, away from Earth. No, Earth has its share of cryovolcanoes, because, as I said, water is a chemical, just like methane, whatever. And when it flows down into a chasm, that's what causes the tremendous explosion. Let me explain briefly also that you can tell the age of a volcano or volcanic structure by the amount of water erosion. Let's take a good example is the, let's say, the Hawaiian Islands, where you have a series of volcanoes. You start up at the left, the island called Kauai is the oldest, the most eroded of all of the islands, and then Oahu is, and then as you go out the midway chain, you start seeing what are known as atolls. You look at the northern coast of the island of Oahu, which is the second most westernmost island of the Hawaiian chain. And the north coast has a reef barrier and about a mile out. What the reef barrier is, or the atoll, it's basically a reef, coral reef barrier around the island. Here's what happened. As the rain erodes the island away slowly, taking the rock and dirt that forms from the rock, as this flows out into the ocean and away, that leaves kind of a little shelf off of the edge of the island. Well, as that shelf drops off to where the old side of the volcano used to be, coral begins to grow there, and it forms a ring around the island. Basically in the shape of the original island, where the original island hit the water line. And now all of that land has been washed away, or a lot of it, leaving a small center island with a ring, not a circular ring, but a ring that corresponds with the original shape of the island as it was after the original volcanic activity. And so an atoll structure means a very, very old island in an ocean. That's very indicative. Let's go to Mars. Mars has islands with atolls. Mars has erosion. Olympus Mons, the biggest volcano in the solar system, has a good deal of erosion. This shows that Mars sat in an ocean. You can see the windward and the leeward side of Olympus Mons. You can see where the ocean waves came in. Just as with the northeast parts of the islands, of the Hawaiian Islands, where the trade winds come in typically, that's where the rain is the heaviest. That's where the most erosion is. That's where the big slough caverns and valleys typically form. That's where the roughest terrain is. That's where the parts of the island simply break off and wash off into the ocean and eventually are eroded away by water activity. So on Olympus Mons you see all of this activity, but the only thing about Mars is there are no oceans. It just shows that Mars at one time had vast oceans and it had water activity just like Earth. Mars has atolls. You see atolls ringing islands on Mars. How did this happen? Well, Mars had oceans. NASA and also conveniently tries to classify these as billions of years old, And I always make fun of them because I say that NASA has a hat. Standard science has a hat. When anything is discovered, any scientific oddity, let's for example, the coral reefs off of Thailand, which were originally given the okay for scientists to go in and study them, but only accredited scientists, mind you. But these are coral reefs that are above the ocean water. Well, how did they get above the ocean water level if they formed under the ocean water level? Well, standard science has explanations for all of this, but what they don't have is an explanation for the atolls on Mars. How did that happen? So, at any rate, there are Titan, the moon of Saturn, has volcanoes. I want to mention also Enceladus as another moon of the solar system that has active volcanoes. Triton, I'm sorry, the moon of Neptune, active volcanoes. I saw a picture one time of the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. Now, this was after Hale-Bopp, the comet, through the mid-1990s up through the year 2000. As it was moving out of the solar system, I saw what probably should have never gotten to my eyes, but it was a photo of the nucleus. It was taken with a space shuttle, or the Hubble Space Telescope. But there was a plume, a volcanic plume, coming off the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. And it was about a moon-sized object, but very distant in the solar system, as Hale-Bopp lost its tail as it moved out of the solar system. And it had a plume, a volcanic plume, very nicely formed. And in outer space, with no atmosphere, the moons like, say, Io of Jupiter, the plumes are very symmetric. They look like a woodland mushroom, almost. And as the material comes up and evenly spreads out into a circle. So, the point is that I was mentioning Hale-Bopp, that Hale-Bopp had volcanic plumes. It was the newest member of our solar system. By the way, I'm out of time here. Remember to go to the jmccsci.com homepage. I'm just a firm believer that people need to be prepared. If you have the things that you find on my homepage, the flax, the freeze-dried food, and a water filter, you could survive any catastrophe. These are the best items that you can get. Of course, you can always get flashlights, things like that. I don't sell flashlights. I don't sell anything else, just the very essentials. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.